From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The 2020 presidential election remains in doubt, but moved a couple of steps closer to conclusion over the past week. This past Monday, Wisconsin and Arizona became the last two of six contested states to certify their presidential vote counts. President Trump vowed to continue pressing legal challenges to the certifications. Arizona's Secretary of State certified her state's election results alongside the governor and attorney general. Several hours later, the chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission completed her state's canvass and declared Biden the winner of that state's 10 electoral votes. That declaration was promptly certified by Wisconsin's governor. The certifications moved the complex electoral process one step closer to official completion on December 14th when the Electoral College meets. Arizona's certification of the state results came as the president's legal advisors and Republican members of the Arizona State Legislature heard 9 hours of testimony from witnesses at a hearing in Phoenix on Monday, with sweeping and detailed allegations that the election was stolen. The lawmakers in attendance called for their colleagues to support an upcoming resolution that would delay the release of the state's Electoral College votes. During the hearing, Arizona State Representative Mark Fincham, he told reporters that they hoped to have a resolution within the next 24 to 48 hours. The legislature has the final say over that state's 11 Electoral College votes. President Trump called in and spoke to attendees at the hearing via cell phone. He called the 2020 election the greatest scam ever perpetrated against our country. He also said additional suits would be filed as soon as Tuesday in Wisconsin and Georgia. The legal contests in Arizona are not over either. It's one of a number of states that permit election results to be challenged after certification in state proceedings. Lawyers for Kelly Ward, chair of the state Republican Party, filed such a contest immediately following Monday's certification. Last week, they had asked a Maricopa County judge to allow the inspection of mail ballot envelopes, arguing that poor signature verification practices had allowed fraudulent votes to be counted. Details of that were provided at the hearing by multiple witnesses. During a court hearing on that request Monday, attorneys for the state Republican Party chair had assembled a team of handwriting experts to inspect whether the signatures on envelopes matched those on file. Judge Randall Warner agreed to allow them time to inspect 100 mail ballot envelopes and 100 duplicated ballots that had been filled out by election workers where original ballots were damaged. That was in advance of an evidentiary hearing he has set for Thursday. Meanwhile, in Georgia, which had certified Biden's victory on November 20th, a second recount was conducted at the request of the Trump campaign. The outcome of that is expected to be litigated over questions about the legality of the new mail-in ballot procedure in that state and other allegations of election fraud or failure. In a news release, the Trump campaign called on Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, to audit absentee ballot signatures, claiming that tens of thousands of votes should have been discarded because of non-matching signatures there. Three other states where the Trump campaign is challenging the results, Michigan, Nevada, and Pennsylvania, have also certified. Court cases are pending in each at the state and federal level. Wisconsin formally certified Biden's victory, giving him 10 electoral votes. He leads Trump there by more than 20,000 votes, a number that was confirmed after a recount requested by the president's campaign in the state's two largest counties. There's pending litigation in Wisconsin, and the president said his campaign would file a suit arguing that the recount included illegally cast ballots, tens of thousands of which should be invalidated. During the recount, his lawyers argued that election officials had misinterpreted state law in accepting the ballots in the first place. Wisconsin state law allows campaigns that lose a recount 5 days to challenge the results in court. In a statement Monday, the state elections administrator Megan Wolf said a judge could still order the certification to be amended should Trump succeed in court. Multiple lawsuits in federal and state court in Pennsylvania challenging the outcome would negate a certification issued there after an appellate court this past weekend reversed a stay of the certification process issued last Wednesday. The federal case in that state is likely tracking to the U.S. Supreme Court. An election contest is also underway in Nevada, where state law allows the Trump campaign to take depositions ahead of a hearing scheduled in Carson City Court on Thursday. And we will continue to follow this as it develops. Meanwhile, in the public relations battle over who won the November election, Ambassador Kay Bailey Hutchinson, the permanent U.S. representative to NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, described Democratic hopeful Joe Biden Monday as the president-elect and referred to his team as the incoming administration. Again, until the certifications are settled and the Electoral College votes, there is no president-elect, and the outcome of the vote in the Electoral College December 14th is at this time still uncertain. Nevertheless, some bold moves being taken at NATO by its Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, despite the announcement by President Trump over the past weeks that he intends to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan, leaving behind only a small security force of 2,500, Stoltenberg said NATO, which is funded mostly by the United States, would pick up the slack. These are his comments issued on Monday.
We have been there for almost two decades, and the country has come a long way. We now see an historic opportunity for peace. It is fragile, but it must be seized. As part of the peace process, we have adjusted our presence. The United States has recently decided to further reduce its troop numbers. But NATO's training mission continues, with over half of the forces from European allies and partner nations. No one wants to stay in Afghanistan longer than necessary. In the months ahead, we will continue to assess our presence based on conditions on the ground. Ministers will also address Russia's military buildup around the lines. Russia is modernizing its nuclear arsenal and fielding new missiles. It is deploying more forces in our neighborhood from the high north to Syria and Libya. We also see an increased Russian presence as a result of the crisis in Belarus and Nagorno-Karabakh. So ministers will discuss what more we should do to respond to Russia's growing military activity and to maintain the arms control regime, including limitations on nuclear warheads, as the new START treaty is due to expire next February. I have invited President-elect Joe Biden, to a NATO summit in Brussels early next year. The specific date is not yet decided, but there will be a NATO summit, and of course all NATO leaders will be there, and of course also the newly elected President-elect Joe Biden. And I'm looking forward to welcoming President Biden then next year to a NATO summit here in Brussels, because that's the best way for all allies, heads of state and government, to meet, to sit down. And at that summit, I will also put forward my proposals on how to continue to strengthen, how continue to adapt NATO as an agile and strong alliance.
As we mentioned earlier, members of the Arizona State Legislature heard testimony from people who had allegations of all kinds of widespread fraud and misdeeds in the election this past November 3rd. Testimony ran for more than 9 hours on Monday in Phoenix. We bring you excerpts of some of that to give you an idea of the substance of the testimony. A similar hearing was held in Pennsylvania this past Wednesday.
Would you please give your name and your credentials and just 10 seconds on what you expect to show?
Sure. My name is Matt Brainerd. I'm the leader of the Voter Integrity Project, looking into anomalies and potential illegal ballots cast in this election in the 6 pivotal states, including Arizona. I have a background working in voter data going back over 20 years with the Republican National Committee, with President Trump's campaign, with election administration and redistricting firm Election Data Services. So this is an area where I have a lot of experience and expertise. So are you ready for me to start?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Proceed. Thank you.
A couple days after the election, I just a second. I and a team of dedicated individuals with experience similar to my own in the field of voter data and analysis decided to engage in an experiment of sorts to detect potentially illegal ballots without any preconceived notions about what we might find, what we want to find, just to try to determine the truth using a couple of different analytical methods. Fortunately, despite the great expense of this experiment, we were able to fundraise through crowdsourcing in a very short order. We've raised over $600,000 from almost 9,000 different donors all over the country who are interested in finding the truth. And we entered this with no, although many of us have political biases personally, we brought none of those biases to our analysis. We just decided we wanted to try to find the truth using methods we believe to be reliable. Our findings were across the country. We found a tremendous number of anomalies. And Arizona is at the forefront of many of the anomalies we found. Now, unlike many other states that we evaluated, there were some unique limitations to our analysis in Arizona. In general, we were only able to get data for early and absentee voters in all of the six states we targeted. In Arizona, we were only able to get early and absentee voters for the county of Maricopa. So all the numbers I'm sharing with you, all the analysis, is based solely on Maricopa. Now, as the other counties make their data available, we'll certainly try to update these reports and these numbers. But just looking at Maricopa, we found some interesting results. So I'm going to open up a PowerPoint that kind of covers the country, but I'm really just going to speak about Arizona, which is, I know what you're interested in. So. Okay. So we ran five or six different experiments on each of these states. One experiment that we ran where we isolated a universe of voters according to the state who had been sent an absentee ballot but did not return that ballot. And we asked them two questions. One, we asked them, you know, by reaching out to them via phone, because we were operating three different call centers to try to reach these people to confirm whether or not they had ever requested that absentee ballot and whether or not they returned it. So in Arizona, we were able to reach 2,044 people who had been identified as having requested an absentee ballot and not returned it, according to the state. Of those, 44% of them said they never requested that ballot. Then, among the individuals who did say they did request it, we asked, well, did you send it back? And among those, of the overall universe, we had 354 of them say, yeah, I actually mailed it back, despite the state not recording having received it back. Now, I've got a little bit of a audio-visual for you because our call centers were recording phone calls. Now, none of this is speculative. I know that some people have, other analysts in some of the court cases I've been involved in have taken our numbers and then projected them. Say, for example, projecting that 44% of the did not request of our sample out to the entire universe of about 500,000 on return and saying these are the number of ballots that it seems or appears possible that somebody else requested those ballots other than the voter of record. But I'm not doing that myself. Others are welcome to make that analysis. I don't have a background as a statistician. But what I do have is I'd like to share with you some of the audio recordings of at least two of the individuals we spoke to who said that they did not get a ballot. They did not request the ballot despite being sent them. Now, these audio recordings have been modified to cut out like their last names because we don't want to inadvertently dox anybody here. But if somebody privately, as you are in positions of authority in the legislature, wants full recordings, we're more than happy to share that with you. More than happy to give you the names, addresses, phone numbers of everybody we've identified in these categories. Okay? So I'm going to play the one audio recording of an individual.
This is, who are you?
Voter integrity. Bear with me as I make some adjustments.
We recognize that technology is great until you actually need to have it work.
Yeah, but we can find a workaround if we need to. So I'm just going to hold the mic to the computer speaker.
Can't hear it.
Can we get it out of this bit? Okay, we'll try it again. Okay.
Let's get in here.
Teenagers, when we need
headphones, and then yeah, turn it up a good bit. Let's try it again.
Hello, this is Mary Kemper with Voter Integrity Fund. May I please speak to Charles?
This is, who are you with?
Voter Integrity Fund. Charles March in the state of Arizona and Ismar is having requested an absentee ballot. Did you request an absentee ballot?
Absolutely did not.
No. Okay, and did you? Okay, no. Okay, somebody from our team will follow up with you, and can you please give us the best phone number? Is it this?
So I'll play for you the second example.
Hello? Hello?
Hi.
Hi, is this Zofa?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Taj. I'm with the Voter Integrity Fund. In the state of Arizona, it said that you requested the absentee ballot. I'm just making sure that you requested that ballot.
No, I did not request an absentee ballot.
Okay, somebody from our team will follow up with you. Is this a good number to follow back up with you on?
Yes.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time, and you have a good day.
Okay.
Excuse me, Matt, before you go too much further, can you tell me what counties were those calls made to?
The only county that's released data for us is Maricopa.
All right, thank you.
Sure. I'm going to proceed. So we, with some of the other experiments we ran, one of them was, again, no one's ever kind of tried to do this after an election before. Nobody's had the interest or the funds to do so. To really think about, you know, if people were trying to cast illegal ballots, either as part of an organized voter fraud effort or just somebody just deciding I'm going to cast a ballot I shouldn't, maybe a ballot that's not for my name, just one individual deciding, you know, I got an absentee ballot request to this address, my address. This person doesn't live in here anymore, but maybe I should fill it out and see if I can cast it. Or, you know, potential clerical errors. And no one's ever really done this before. So we tried some stuff that just kind of that made us curious, things that we thought we might find things. So in Arizona, we actually pulled a universe of people who had never voted before, except they've showed up and voted this election. And just call them and say, hey, did you actually cast that ballot? It's very hard. Any of you who've, I'm sure, in your maybe races for office have operated phone centers or conducted public polling. When you start out with a universe that's, you know, pretty big, once you start trying to dial that and get responses, that number, that universe shrinks a lot and shrinks very quickly because you have a broad universe and you have to try to append phone numbers to it and you get maybe half of them or so. And the people who the numbers are correct or they don't go to voicemail or some other problem, people who actually pick up the phone and then start answering questions, that universe shrinks a lot. So we did this experiment in Arizona with some, again, voters who had never voted before, and asked them if they had cast that ballot. Now, about 1% of them told us that they didn't. But remember, those were people willing to talk to us and admit that they did not cast a ballot. And many of the people we reached, we had to leave voice messages for. We just couldn't get a hold of. But one person in particular, I want to play a video for you guys, who we left him a voicemail, but he never talked to us, so he's not included in these numbers. So I want to share just a clip, if I can, from a program. Let me adjust the volume here.
Maricopa County, Arizona, to Tennessee about 5 months ago so he could train for the Olympics. So you can imagine his surprise when he got a message from something called the Voter Integrity Fund.
The state of Arizona is reporting that a ballot was cast in the name of Nashawn Garrett in the general election on Tuesday. If Nashawn Garrett did not cast this ballot, please call us back.
Well, that doesn't sound fishy at all, right? Well, Nashawn didn't think so either. So he went to the state of Arizona's voting website only to discover that his ballot had been accepted. And Maricopa County's voter portal said his ballot was signature verified and counted. The only problem is he'd already voted in Tennessee. He didn't vote in Arizona. Nashawn Garrett joins me now. Nashawn, great to see you. Now, you never received an Arizona absentee ballot or an application for mail-in ballot. So who the heck cast your ballot in Arizona?
That is an excellent question. That is an excellent question. I have no idea, and that's the reason why I'm on here with you tonight.
So I'm going to stop the video there.
What does it make you think about this?
But I think you get the drift of that. I'm actually going to play for you another recording here, which actually this one was particularly interesting to me.
Hi, my name is Thomas with the Voter Integrity Fund. May I please speak with Riley?
Yep, speaking to him.
All right, hi. Can you confirm whether or not you cast a ballot in the state of Arizona?
I'm a felon, so I can't vote.
All right. Oh, let me see here. According to the state of Arizona, somebody cast a ballot in your name, and you may be a victim of voter fraud. Can you please give us the best number to reach you?
I mean, probably the one you're calling me at.
So I cut the video because, you know, whenever we reach somebody like this, we want to ask them a couple questions. Is the best number to reach you at? Would you be willing to sign a declaration or something like that so we could pass that off to attorneys? I think those are two, and we've got hundreds of them of different categories. So we'll, as you've heard, we have recordings of everyone we spoke to, all of the 900 or so that didn't request, all of the 354 that said they did request but mailed it back and somehow state never got their vote. I want to talk about one of the other experiments we ran. We, at great expense, obtained a national voter file, and we used it to determine people who may have been registered here, moved to another state, registered to vote there, I believe invalidating their residency or inability to vote here, and then cast a ballot back here because, we all have anecdotes, right? We've all heard crazy stories. I've had people, since this project has started, emailing me stories about the sister-in-law or brother-in-law they don't like, they suspect they may have cast two ballots, they want me to look into it, and giving me their full addresses and dates of birth. Or I've also received, though, screenshots of social media profiles saying, this person, they live in New York City, they've lived here a long time, but they figured their vote wouldn't really matter in New York City, but it would matter back in Arizona. So there's anecdotes, right? I don't think it's ever possible to maybe get enough of those anecdotes to have a meaningful number. But what we did is we took our national voter file and looked at registration dates there. And then we looked at the registration dates of people we matched it to in Arizona, where they moved from Arizona to California, for example, registered to vote there, and then decided they shopped their ballot, potentially, or they had the ballot cast in their name and decide, you know what, my vote might count more in Arizona than it does in California, swing state. So we're able to identify these individuals who had a subsequent registration out of state but cast their early absentee here. Again, just Maricopa County and just early absentee, no election day. We also did an NCOA analysis. And when people move from one state to another, the Postal Service sort of tracks that. Often people fill out an NCOA card saying, I've moved here, please forward my mail. It's a pretty good indicator. They've established residency somewhere else. And we found among this population a substantial number who NCOA'd to another state but cast their ballot here. Now, I've kind of earned the reputation lately as kind of a data guy, but I work as a general consultant. I do all kinds of work around the country for candidates, everything from speeches to fundraising to designing literature. I've knocked on over 1,000 doors myself this country, this cycle in states all over the country. And I can tell you that a lot of times, you know, people are, they move and they're very careful about where they can vote, where they can make potentially cast their vote, where they think if they have options, they make a choice, and sometimes they don't always make the right choice. So just in my experience of that, you know, it's not that uncommon. So people move, but they can still vote here. They get an absentee request forwarded to them, and they cast the ballot. They shouldn't. When we combine those numbers together for your state, and we merge, and we t- take out some that we estimate to have been military moves, which doesn't, they don't actually lose their ability to vote in the state, we came up with a total of about 5,700 or so, in just Maricopa, just early absentees. We also identified a population of double voters. Now, what's unique about this is that, again, we're not looking at people who maybe voted in person in California and voted by mail here. We're only able, because of limited data in many states, to compare early absentee voters to early absentee voters in other states. So if they voted early absentee in Arizona and voted early absentee, for example, in California, they'd show up here. But if and when we get access to election day voter lists, we'll be able to, these numbers will inevitably go up. And also, we've got a lot of limitations on our ability to match. One of those limitations is the availability of full and accurate dates of birth from states on their voter lists. In a lot of cases, states will suppress that. And that prevents us from being able to get a successful match on somebody who moved out of state with a subsequent registration. Because for us, for our project, we can't be the Voter Integrity Project without integrity, and that requires a very tight match. So we're sure it's not just somebody with the same name, or even somebody with the same name born in the same year, but it's got to be day, month, year, exact as best we can. And we actually try to match on cell phones too when we're able to do that. So that kind of concludes the initial findings that I wanted to share with you about your state in particular. And I'd be happy to take any questions if you have them.
Mr. Mayor, do you want to ask this gentleman some questions?
You go ahead.
No? All right. Matt, I really appreciate you coming in. I know that you flew in, I think, late last night to make a short and succinct presentation. Can you tell me, relative to the work that you've done, with certainty, how many votes were cast that should not have been? Just a high-level number, because obviously, for example, the Trump campaign would like to see 10,457 votes overturned. But, not to be exact, but... are we there based on the work that you've done? Because as we look at your work and the work of other people, we're starting to chip away at that number in a pretty serious way.
I would say there's two levels of confidence I have, okay? The first level of confidence is very. And I'm very confident that we get very close to that number when we take the residency issues and then apply it to the other counties for which we weren't able to obtain data.
Good
the
point.
Second level of confidence is where you take a number of projection. We go back out to low activity analysis and NCO analysis, which I'm not going to get in the weeds, but these are basically people telling us that they had votes, that they didn't cast votes that were cast in their name. If you're comfortable projecting these numbers to the population that we were trying to reach via phone that we just couldn't, I think then you reach another level of certainty that you're able to bridge that gap. So I think that I have a high degree of confidence that the number of ballots that were cast that should not have been cast, illegal ballots, surpasses the margin of victory as it stands right now.
Thank you very much. Representative Biasucci, you're the first to ask questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, second, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt, very much for your presentation. I just had a couple questions. For the 44% that you said did not request an early ballot but got one, how many people did you poll to get that 44%?
Well, we started off, as you can see in the chart, or maybe you can't see, with a large number of unreturned ballots in your state in Maricopa. And then we reached out. We were able to get a phone match to maybe a quarter million of those. The number we were able to reach by a phone is 2,044. The number who said they did not request that ballot was 902. Now, when your colleague asked me the question about how many, you know, what's the margin of illegally cast ballots, my estimate, I don't apply any of this, but this does raise a lot of questions. And that should a ballot be counted if somebody themselves did not actually request it?
Right.
Due to time constraints, we presented this one chunk intact as opposed to going through 9 hours of testimony again and bringing you little slices. We will do that over the next few days, depending on whether or not they're still relevant to what goes on with the election process. But the entire hearing is available on the internet, and it is strongly suggested that people who are interested in knowing whether or not there's any weight to the claims made by President Trump to look at this particular hearing.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.